28. Does anybody know the Holovinskis from Cherville? Okay, nobody else knows them. Okay. Mrs. passed away this week, 56 years old. So, 1 Samuel 28, this is a chapter that, as some parts in the Bible, helps us to realize that God doesn't have a box that we could put him in, where sometimes we've got to try to think outside the box, where we may not think something is scriptural, but if it's not against it, here is something that's very unusual in this chapter. And it's about when Saul went to the woman with a familiar spirit, and then Samuel came back. And it doesn't say it was a devil came back in the form of Samuel, which is the usual way. But the Lord will do things that might cause us to think about some things. And if we can think outside the box once in a while, which we need to learn to do that, either a fundamentalist box or whatever box we have put God in, the Lord often gets us to think about things. Okay, let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I do ask you to help us to understand this chapter. And Lord, this is something very strange. But Lord, I do pray you'd help us to be willing to understand your words, even if they would go against or go contrary to some things that we think that should be done or the way it should be done. Help us to be faithful to your words in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, when Jan was in Australia, she witnessed to a barber, and he was an unusual Catholic when he was excited about his faith. And he gave her 5 CDs or DVDs, a combination of both. 2 of them was 2 Baptist, or 1 Baptist, raised Baptist, turned Catholic after studying all this stuff. And the other one was a guy raised Baptist, turned away from God, then became Assembly of God, and then turned Catholic. And I thought it was a pretty slick presentation, but I listened to both of them, not all the way through, because it kind of gets old. But when I hear that stuff, that right there is what motivates me to teach the Bible better, more than anything. When I see the slick presentation that these guys can give and hoodwink somebody. And they were both very slick in what they did. Very smooth in their talk, and these Catholics sitting there, ooh, yay, you know, all this stuff. But, you know, some preachers like the BBF movement, Baptist Bible Fellowship, they often would have preachers get together on a monthly basis, and they yell at each other, you know, all day long or during their time. And that kind of encourages them to stay faithful to the Lord. And yeah, maybe so. And I've gone to those preachers' conferences and usually left discouraged because it was kind of depressing to hear what was being said. Okay, or things like that. But what motivates me more than anything is to see the slick salesman and how people are buying into that, and all you had to do is point out this and this and this, and you could overthrow their position. But if a person is not precise in their Bible study, then it's easily to be fooled. And so when I see that to me is why we need to teach this Bible verse by verse. Because that's what exposes that stuff, so we're not tricked. Several years ago, there's a couple in Rensselaer that the Lord allowed me to lead to Christ, and they came to church for a couple of years, and then got into marriage troubles and fell away, and then tried to come back, and they had a Jehovah's Witness come over to their house, and he called me up and said, "Hey, would you come on over here? JW's here." And I said, "Okay." So I came over, and it was just a mile down the road, so I went over there, and JW is preaching away. And so I'd tell them where they're wrong, and they'd preach it away, and I'd tell them where they're wrong. And finally they said, "This guy won't let us talk." And so the man that called me over is his house. He said, "Okay, you just be quiet and let him talk." I said, "Okay, it's your house." So he was letting him talk. And the lady asked them about losing salvation. And the J.W. said, well, you remember the story of Elijah and the false prophets? And she probably faintly remembered it. And they said, you remember that Elijah called upon the Lord and the false prophets called upon the Lord. I couldn't let that slide. I couldn't contain myself. I just said, you lied. That's all I said. He said, you were told to be quiet. I said, yeah, but you lied. He said, well, they called upon Baal. I said, big difference. Big difference. Where he was going to lead that is that people who call on the Lord lose their salvation like the false prophet. That's where he was leading that. And I could tell from his eyes that he was convicted for his lie. You can tell when you watch people's eyes. And this was the same guy. 2 years earlier, I'd already dealt with the same guy. And he was telling the other party that the story of the rich man and Lazarus, the parable of Dives and Lazarus, okay, was a parable about the rich man Lazarus. And so I offered him $20 to show me the word parable in the chapter. He started looking and said, well, I know it's in there. I said, $20, my friend. And he couldn't find it. And so that was the same guy. So he's getting ready to go out the door because he had been caught in a lie, and now he's embarrassed. I couldn't resist, and I said, hey, did you ever find parable in Luke 16? I got $20 for you. He remembered that offer. Turned around, was going to speak, and gave up and walked out. But that's the preciseness what we need to be in our Bible. Being very precise, very particular about it. Not that we are critical of people. We understand the spirit. Sometimes when people preach and their spirit is wanting to please the Lord, if they don't say some things right, so what? Let the Lord deal with it. We don't have to go up there and get in their face. You're wrong here and here and here and here. And you're wrong by your attitude, my friend. Okay, but when it's somebody trying to convince somebody away from the Bible, that's when we could step in and say, okay, this, this, and this. Okay, 1 Samuel 28, this is when Saul visits the witch of Endor. When we were in Israel, the Israeli guide that we had on our bus, two times we drove past this place, and he said, that over there is Endor. And he said, that's where my sister-in-law lives. And I knew the story, not too many laugh, but I picked up on it. What he was trying to say is that his sister was over there, the witch. Okay, 1 Samuel 28. And it came to pass in those days that the Philistines gathered their armies together for warfare to fight with Israel. And Achish said unto David, know thou assuredly that thou shalt go out with me to battle, thou and thy men. Okay, remember previously in the last couple chapters, was it back in 24, I think it was, maybe? Is that he goes there and he holds up there and he becomes part of that community. And the king, Achish, is thinking that David has abandoned Israel. He is now the enemy of Israel, so he's on the Philistine side. And David had not let that be made known. He just let the man think about that. And he was going out fulfilling some battles for Israel in the previous chapter, but he killed every single person, men, women, and children, so no testimony could get out of there that he was actually still for Israel. And Achish hadn't found that out yet. Verse 2, and David said to Achish, surely thou shalt know what thy servant can do. Now, he didn't lie, did he? He just didn't give all the truth. And at this time, David in his mind is probably thinking, how am I going to get out of this one? Okay, because he is in a predicament. He doesn't want to fight against Saul, but he doesn't either want to be exposed from this situation. He says, and Achish said to David, therefore will I make thee keeper of mine head forever. Now Samuel was dead, and all Israel lamented him and buried him in Ramah, even in his own city. And Saul had put away those that had familiar spirits and wizards out of the land. Okay, in Exodus 22:18 it says, "Suffer not to let a witch live." And of course, Christians are blamed for the Salem witch trials. And really, none of us know really what happened there. It's hard to dig that up. You know, whoever's in charge of the history books are the ones that usually win. And so, all we can say is, if somebody says Christians killed the witches at the Salem, all we could say is, well, if they were Christians, they were not Bible readers, because that is forbidden in the New Testament. That was allowed in the Old Testament, but that's not allowed in the New Testament. I've had people say to me about Christians fighting in the Crusades, and I usually say, well, make sure you get your terminology correct. It was Catholics and Muslims fighting in the Crusades. Okay, and so in the New Testament, the weapons of our warfare are not carnal. So in the New Testament, that death sentence placed upon witches in Exodus 22, that is placed for Israel under their governmental system. And that doesn't hold true for us in the New Testament. Okay, Paul demonstrates that in the New Testament is you burn their books, you burn the Ouija, you burn their, you know, all the books that they got involved and all the little trinkets, but they preach at the witches. You don't you use a spiritual sword to go after the witches, not a literal sword. Now, under the Old Testament covenant, Saul was doing right here. At least he kicked him out of the land. Now, I find it interesting, a familiar spirit. See how close that is to the word family? And I don't know about that, but when you go like in the hollers of Kentuck, and you got all the incest going on, and you've got a lot of witchcraft going on in those places, but then you also see this same idea. You know, the common joke is that down in Kentucky, that their family tree doesn't fork. You know, and if you get talking to some of these people, and you can see that, yeah, that is true. But that's not only true there. That's true with the upper echelon, the Rothschilds and company. They are like that. Now, they do it for different reasons, because they think that we're scum, and they don't want to mess up their bloodline. Okay, but the same goes in the top and the bottom on this thing. So it says, Saul had put away those that had familiar spirits and wizards out of the land. Now, when you have something like this, you're never going to bat 1,000. You're not going to get rid of all of them. You know, if we had a consistent death sentence for murder, it would obviously bring the idea of murder down, but you're never going to eliminate it because you got man's sinful nature. But it certainly would bring her down for murder and rape. Verse 4, and the Philistines gathered themselves together and came and pitched in Shunem, and Saul gathered all Israel together, and they pitched in Gilboa. And when Saul saw the host of the Philistines, bunch of them Philistines can multiply like rabbits. Okay, the average white family in America has 1 point so many kids. Okay, that's the average. You know, obviously, you're not getting 2/10 of a kid in there, but that's the average. The average black family is 4 per family. And the average Muslim, because of polygamy, they're running 8 and more. So that we can see that we're going to become overpopulated and outrun. Right. Right. And he opens it. Part of his plan. Yes, ma'am. Yep, part of his plan. Okay, so he says that they had a bunch of them out there. Saul was afraid because he saw the masses of them, and his heart greatly trembled. And when Saul inquired of the Lord, now here's the worst thing that can happen to anybody, is God ignore us. The worst that God can do to any man or any nation is to leave them alone. It's the worst thing he could do. Okay, so he inquired of the Lord, and the Lord answered him not. Right there, that's the worst. neither by dreams, nor by Urim, nor by prophets. Okay, so those were the three methods, the variation of God giving out his word at that time period. By dreams, Numbers 12, verse 6, God made his words known through dreams and visions. By Urim, the Urim and Thummim, that's that thing on the breastplate where David already asked several times about that. In fact, he's going to ask in chapter 30 about that, through the Urim and Thummim, and God didn't even answer through that, nor by the prophets. And in Amos 3, verse 7, he says he reveals his secrets unto the prophets. Hebrews chapter 1, verse 1 says that God spake in diverse manners in times past. How does God get his word out? Multiple ways. Angels have done it. Dreams, visions, prophets, people. It could be a child. It could be a lady. It could be a man. It could be an unsaved man. God gets his words out even through an unsaved man. That's what happened to Josiah. When an unsaved man spoke the words of God to Josiah, he rejected it because it was an unsaved man or an unrighteous man giving him the words. He did not realize that God can speak to him through that way. God is a God of variety. And it's interesting to me, the Lord is just amazing in his Bible, where people will say, well, Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever, so there's nothing changed throughout the Bible. It's all the same all the way through. Hebrews 13, verse 8. Okay, yeah, Jesus is the same yesterday, and today, and forever, but the same letter starts off saying that God has given out his words in diverse ways. That God is a God of variety. You see, where the evolutionists look at all the DNA of the animals and say, well, they must have came from the same source, you know, where they evolved. Well, it did come from the same source, God, but then he put varieties in there because he is a God of variety. And so, you know, that's one of the things people just, that they mess up in the Bible is they don't see the difference between the Old Testament and New Testament. Okay, so that is utmost important. So there, the Lord answered him not, wouldn't talk to him. Neither by dreams, Urim, no prophets. So now Saul is desperate. Then said Saul unto his servant, seek me a woman that hath a familiar spirit, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And his servant said to him, behold, there is a woman that hath a familiar spirit at Endor. Notice they know. People know. Why didn't she get kicked out? Must have had some connections. Saul disguised himself, put on other raiment, and he went. And two men with him, and they came to the woman by night, and he said, I pray thee, divine unto me by the familiar spirit. Now, why didn't that familiar spirit tell her that this was the king? They don't bat 1,000. Okay, so he's asking her to divination, tell the future, and the devil can do these things mainly because of experience. Okay, but God can do these things because of power. And the way both God and the devil does these things, they make a statement, it's a prophetic statement, and then both of them will place words in the mind of people who will act upon these words to either fulfill the statement or not. The person thinks that they are having an original thought, but God gave them the thought and then they acted upon it. Now, the devil, he cannot bat 1,000. God can bat 1,000 and has batted 1,000 on his prophecies. Even if he puts his thoughts in one person's mind where they were heading that route and then they changed their mind and decided not to act it, he had another one ready to go to fill in the place. The Lord's got his bases covered. So he says, I pray thee, divine unto me by the familiar spirit, and bring me him up, whom I shall name unto thee. And the woman said unto him, behold, thou knowest what Saul hath done, how he hath cut off those that have familiar spirits, and the wizards. out of the land? Wherefore then layest thou a snare for my life to cause me to die? You can see she's afraid. Hey, man, I'm sticking my neck out here, and I'm not going to, I'm kind of scared here. And Saul sware to her by the Lord, saying, as the Lord liveth. Okay, that becomes an oath that is not to be changed. As the Lord liveth, there shall no punishment happen to thee for this thing. Now, I don't know why she thinks that that oath is good, depending on who he is, but that's good enough for this woman. Then said the woman, whom shall I bring up unto thee? And then he said, bring me up Samuel. So here's an unsaved witch, and she's going to have a seance, and she's going to try to bring up somebody. Now, when they do these things, what they're going to do in most cases, if not 99% of the cases, it's a devil that comes up in the form of that individual, and that devil will tell this person the truth at first, and then eventually, if they buy into this, then eventually it will start giving them little deceptive things, ploys, until it starts trusting in the spirit. And then eventually lead that person down a road of destruction. But they'll start with what that person thinks to be true. Okay, this same gentleman that I mentioned earlier about the Jehovah's Witness, this man was a man that had a childlike mind, a childlike faith. Just a very down-to-earth fella. And he was a big-time hunter and trapper and, mainly a hunter. I mean, he would hunt deer with his pickup, run down to the ditch, try to run them over if he had to, which he did. I mean, chasing a deer with his truck. And so this guy was a fox. He liked to trap fox, catch fox. Now, there was somebody in his past that gave him a secret of how to do this. It was a relative, it was an uncle. But for some reason, his uncle told him, I don't want you to tell anybody this secret except your son. Well, he violated the secret. Okay? He violated the secret, told a friend. His uncle had passed away previously. So he told a friend his secret, and he ceased catching fox. He couldn't catch him anymore. So what did he do? Well, childlike faith, he goes out to the cemetery and talks to his uncle. So he's sitting out there talking to him, and I'm apologizing, asking his forgiveness because he told his secret to somebody else. And then his uncle didn't show up there. His uncle showed up at the foot of his bed one night when he's in bed. Sitting there is his uncle. And he's telling me this story. He said, what was that? And I said, don't think it was your uncle. He said, what was it? Well, tell me the story. He told me the rest of the story, that whatever was sitting at the end of his bed told him what he should do. He followed the orders. He started catching foxes like crazy. And he said, what was it? I said, it's a devil. He said, why would it tell me the truth? To reel you in? That's why. Oh. You see, and it manifests itself just like his uncle. And this is the kind of power Satan has. Now, that's not what this is. Okay, in this case, if the woman says it's Samuel, or if Saul said it's Samuel, it could have easily been a devil portraying to be Samuel. But the narrative says it's Samuel. So this is an exception to the rule. The exception doesn't overthrow the rule. The exception proves the rule. So in verse 11, he says, then said the woman, whom shall I bring up unto thee? And he said, bring me up Samuel. And when a woman saw Samuel, so the narrative is saying, this is Samuel. She cried with a loud voice. This wasn't normal. She wasn't used to these things. This one shocked her. She had been hoodwinking people before, and this one surprised her. And the woman spake to Saul, saying, why hast thou deceived me, for thou art Saul? Well, she figured that out. How'd she figure that out? Maybe Samuel said, "Well, how you doing, Saul?" And then that scared her. Okay, Samuel had been dead for a while, and it says, "And the king said unto her, Be not afraid, and for what sawest thou? And the woman said unto Saul, I saw God's ascending out of the earth." Okay, lowercase g. So we're dealing with sons of God. Sons of God, Old Testament, angels, fallen angels coming into women. These are gods that are dead or some type of a spirit. And notice they're coming up out of the earth. Like in Revelation 13, the beast comes out of the sea. So there's something going on below our feet. There's a lot being taught here in this passage. Something weird going on below our feet. And I think we are to know a little bit about it, but we don't need to waste a lot of time with it. For some reason, God allowed Samuel to ascend up from Abraham's bosom. Okay, in the Old Testament, when the righteous died, they went down to the heart of the earth as the unrighteous went down to the heart of the earth, and the unrighteous went to hell, or what's known to be the bottomless pit, and the righteous went to Abraham's bosom. Luke 16 writes about that, and there's a gulf between them. So that's where the righteous were. That's where Samuel was, and that's where they have the common saying under the Old Testament, rest in peace. And some still use that on cemetery plots, R.I.P. Technically, that's Old Testament doctrine, because Matthew 27, verse 54, says that their bodies slept. There's no such thing as soul sleep. Their bodies slept. The ones that believe in soul sleep, they always have to go back to the Old Testament for their passages. Seventh-day Adventists, Jehovah's Witnesses, and so forth. Okay, and so Matthew 27, 52 mentioned, excuse me, the body that slept, not the soul. Now, if it's soul sleeping, so what? It doesn't matter. Either way, I wouldn't fuss with anybody about that. You got bigger game than that. I wouldn't sit there and argue with somebody about that. There's a fellow shows up at Rensselaer once in a while, and he thinks that we sleep. And I showed him a passage, and we've discussed it. I showed him a passage where you're absent in the body, present with the Lord. He said, yeah, I've seen that before. And so he don't want to change his mind. I don't care if he wants to change his mind. If he wants to sleep, let him sleep. It doesn't matter to me. I saw this funny little prank, and it was a Canadian prank where they had this older gentleman, gray-haired, red, looks like he's ready for the casket. And so they had him in a wheelchair, and they had an unknown individual of the mall kind of stand behind him. And then he had six or seven people who were his family, pretending to be his family. And this person who was behind the wheelchair was just standing there being kind because they asked them to, and they were going to give him a birthday present. They wheeled out a casket. So they wheeled out this casket. Here's this older man, and the one behind it, eyes just the biggest saucer. They're going to give him a casket? And his face dropped, but then he's all excited, and they're all clapping. He gets inside and feels it all around, and then they show this person the prank that they played. And the person, it's like the old candid camera. Remember the old candid camera? There's some up in Canada that does this. And then they have another one where they got a guy in a casket, and then they pull him in an elevator, and he falls out, and then the people go nuts inside and everything. So all sorts of funny pranks they pull on them. Okay, but here's Samuel coming back. And he does mention the idea of resting. Verse 14, he said unto her, what form is he of? Saul talked to her, what form is he? And she said, an old man cometh up, and he is covered with a mantle. So Saul's mind, he perceives that it was Samuel. And he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed himself. Samuel said to Saul, again, the narrative says it's Samuel. So we got to assume that this is Samuel. This is not a God's faking to be Samuel. He says, why hast thou disquieted me to bring me up? Okay, under the Old Testament, rest in peace. Our doctrine is safe here so far on this thing. And Saul answered, I am sore distressed. And you know, that's why some people do go to these psychics. They're distressed. They can't get an answer anywhere. Now, I realize most of them probably go out of curiosity. And some are just flat witches. But in Saul's case, he's distressed. You know, some Christians do this when they can't get a hold of God. Saul answered, I am sore distressed, for the Philistines make war against me, and God has departed from me, and answereth me no more, neither by prophets nor by dreams. Therefore I have called thee, that thou mayest know, make known unto me what I shall do. Then said Samuel, notice he's not real kind in his words. Okay, if God, you know, the idea is, okay, if God departed from you, why should I talk to you? Who am I? I'm his prophet. I was his judge when I was on earth. Do you think I'm going to change? So, well, let's see what Samuel does. Wherefore dost thou ask of me, seeing the Lord has departed from thee and is become thine enemy? That's pretty bad there. James 4, verse 4 says, a man that's a friend of the world is an enemy with God. Isaiah 63, verse 10 mentions the Spirit of God under the Old Testament covenant. When they would vex the Spirit of God, he would turn around and become their enemy. Isaiah 63, verse 10. Now that's one of the seven occurrences in the Bible where it's called Holy Spirit. It's a lowercase h, uppercase s there, I think, in Isaiah. Okay, and so when the Lord becomes somebody's enemy, man, there's nothing you can do to fix it except repent. Repent and beg God, plead for his mercy. But Saul has not done that, and he will not do that. Saul lost that back in chapter 15. And so Samuel keeps talking. The Lord hath done to him as he spake by me. For the Lord hath rent the kingdom out of thine hand. Now he's pouring some salt in the wound. And given it to thy neighbor, even to David. More salt in the wound. Because thou obeyest not the voice of the Lord, nor executest his fierce wrath upon Amalek. Therefore hath the Lord done this thing unto thee this day. Boy, does he have a good memory. You would have thought he'd gotten over that by now. The Lord keeps his word. And the Lord's memory is forever. And Saul never took care of that. When you go back to 1 Samuel 15, when we read through that, you'll see that he justified himself through the entire process, and he never came clean. And he still hasn't come clean. At that point, he should have said, okay, I was wrong. Now what do I do? But he don't even say that. I would say this is where Saul is of a reprobate mind. Romans chapter 1. And God had dealt with him a long, long time. God doesn't just put the reprobate mind on somebody by choice. It comes through a long process of God working on a man. And when that man rejects what God says, adds to the Bible, subtracts from the Bible, okay, then he's down that road to a reprobate mind. Verse 19, he is not going to give him any good news at all. Moreover, he's going to not only pour the salt in, he's getting his knife out and he's going to cut him to shreds. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with thee into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow shalt thou and thy sons be with me. The Lord also shall deliver the host of Israel into the hand of the Philistines. Saul, you're dead. Tomorrow, you will be dead. You're coming down here with me. Now, I don't know if he's saying you're going to be on my side in Abraham's bosom, or is he saying you're just coming down to the center of the earth? I don't know. So you can go either way on that. Verse 20, then Saul fell straightway all along upon the earth. On the earth. So he fainted. Passed out. Okay, it's not like evangelist Billy Bray back in the 1800s. I think he was in the 1800s. Billy Bray, he went to the doctor, and the doctor said, you're sick, you're going to die. And he said, oh, praise the Lord. How soon is it going to happen? I mean, he was ready to see the Lord. I mean, that's a rare thing. But Saul fell straightway all along on the earth and was sore afraid. He wasn't ready to die. He had not made his peace with God. Because of the words of Samuel. And there was no strength in him, for he had eaten no bread all the day nor all the night. Well, technically, that's not a big deal. You know, 24-hour fast, you know, lose strength for that. It's the pressure that he's under, the stress, the pressure, verse 15, the distress, that emotion just wears a guy out. Verse 21, and the woman came unto Saul and saw that he was sore troubled and said unto him, behold, thine handmaid hath obeyed thy voice, and I have put my life into my hand and have hearkened unto thy words which thou spakest unto me. Now therefore I pray thee, hearken thou also unto the voice of thine handmaid, and let me set a morsel of bread before thee and eat, that thou mayest have strength when thou goest on thy way. And I can't wait till you get out of here. Okay, so she's wanting to get him out, but yet she sees the pressure he's under. And verse 23, but he refused and said, I will not eat. But his servants together with the woman compelled him, and he hearkened unto their voice. So he arose from the earth and sat upon the bed. And the woman had a fat calf in the house, and she hasted and killed it, and took flour and kneaded it, and did bake unleavened bread thereof. I thought that's interesting. Unleavened bread. This witch has the right kind of bread. Unleavened bread. So, if you can imagine the time that all this took, this is taking a lot of time. Okay, but she put the right kind of bread in front of him. She evidently knew the Jewish custom. Maybe she was a Jew. 25, and she brought it before Saul, before his servants, and they did eat. Then they rose up and went away that night. Okay, that's about quarter till. Any questions or comments are we covered? Yes, sir. Really? Boy, aren't they telling people what's going on? Oh, the Pope's curse. Wow. Jack and what? Jill? Okay.
How they used to be here long ago, and somebody severed the beanstalk so that they couldn't come back. And then, of course, somebody found the holy beans that were being held.
Okay.
You know, and the beanstalk grew again, and it created that channel from the first heaven down to earth, because they have a place up in the cloud, up above the clouds.
Oh, okay. Yeah, in the footnote I write on that the gods are coming down, but in Acts 11, people think that they're coming down from up this way, where the gods have come down amongst us, but in actuality, they're coming up from amongst us. Hollywood's got it right, don't they? They're telling people. They're getting them ready. They even say lizards?
Oh, it's like Godzilla. It's like a big giant dinosaur.
Wow.
Yeah, they got like a big green light that glows out of their mouth. Yeah, it's wild.
Okay, anything else? The mic? I have no idea. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, what he's referring to is, where it says that Jesus, before he ascended, descended, and he led captivity captive, where they were captive by death. To me, it's just an exception to the rule. It's like, Elijah, where did he go? You see, it says that he and Enoch, they went up, but yet did they go to heaven, or did they go up and then make a U-turn and go back? I don't know how that works. Those exceptions, again, prove the rule, but it is appointed men once to die, but after this, the judgment. There are several people in the Bible that died twice. And hopefully none of us die because we're waiting for the rapture. So you've got those general things, and I don't know. I don't know how you answer your question, Mike, on that one. Anything else? Yes, sir.
I just thought it was interesting that Paul said specifically, seek your woman. He should have said seek a person.
Right.
There must be something there. I mean, it doesn't say.
Right.
Was he prevailing to do that at that time, or he knew that somebody still existed in the land, he left a place and a hole there, you know.
Right.
Knowing that there was somebody in the land.
Yeah. Like she had a better connection than the guys did. Yeah. Okay, anything else? Okay, prayer requests. Got several folks traveling.